Batter Up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 191 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So spring training games are underway. So it's very exciting in the sense that, you know, there's Mets baseball on our TVs. And, you know, there's the hope springs anew. There's always hope in spring training, except in the usual Mets fashion. Before games even began, the Mets had their first devastating injury of the season. The Mets are so back, baby. Mets baseball is back.
Yeah, before you got too excited, they're like, wait, hold on. You guys are all excited. Let's just calm that down and get that injury right there, right in the beginning.
And it was a classic little Mets injury tease, too, because you're like, sore arm. It's like, oh, just a sore arm. It's spring. It's early. What could it be? Well, it's the Mets. So it could be, I don't know. I was going to say whatever this was. And then halfway through that sentence, I realized I forgot what it was. But it sucks. It's his shoulder. It always sucks when it's the shoulder. We'll see him in June, maybe.
So we are referring to Kodai Senga, in case you haven't seen it. Kodai Senga is injured.
My dude emeritus.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Kodai Senga is injured, which is the biggest Mets storyline right now. And as we alluded to, it went in classic Mets fashion. He reported to camp with shoulder fatigue, which obviously no one expressed major concerns over it. Mendoza didn't seem concerned. Senga himself did not seem concerned. Everybody was not concerned. And then it turns out that the diagnosis is fairly concerning, which is a moderate posterior capsule strain. Now, from what I know, which is not a lot, I am not a sports medicine specialist, but I've spent a lot of time in a sports medicine PT lately. And so from what I know,
I would love for you to just be like a plant in your PT and just like be like, oh, what do you think about, you know, this shoulder condition? Like just kind of run it by him and take surreptitious notes.
There was a guy who was in my like same time slot for a while who was recovering from Tommy John surgery, a pitcher. This is not Tommy John surgery, luckily. But it is still shoulder injuries for pitchers are always very concerning. And capsule strains in particular are not good. However, I think that the posterior is the less concerning of the two. You can have an anterior capsule strain, which I think is worse from what I know about shoulders and from what I know about other pitchers who have had similar injuries. And obviously, yeah, like a tear is worse than a strain. And a labrum tear would be worse. There are a few things that would be worse than this. This is just a strain. In theory, he doesn't need surgery, but it's still not great.
It's not what you want.
No.
And I mean, and my understanding also is like one of the things with the shoulder is that when it's all healed up, it takes a long time to build that strength back up. That like that's a harder recovery than an elbow because there's just so little you can do for so long. So, I mean, that's the other thing is that I think what's tough about this is that it's not like he's going to be back in a few weeks. Like he's definitely going to miss all of April and realistically probably more too.
Well, he's not, he can't throw for 3 weeks. Like he can't do anything for 3 weeks. So, and then it's, he has to go through his own spring training after that.
Yeah.
So yeah, the timeline's not great.
He's basically on the Justin Verlander timeline from last year, if you recall. And so he got a PRP injection, which they are hoping will help. And like Linda mentioned, he's being shut down for 3 weeks. So conservatively, he's going to miss at least the first month of the season, I'd say, with this, because he's shut down from throwing at all for 3 weeks and then he comes back, but he has to do a full spring training style ramp up, like we said. So, yeah, probably the first month is the optimistic timeline. And
we need to throw in like factoring in for Mets too.
The Mets month. I mean, we always refer to it as the Mets month.
Well, of course, like once again, I mean, yes, pitchers get injured. It's going to happen. It shouldn't be the end of your season. Unless you went into the season like, oh, we don't need pitching. We've got Kodai Senga.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we are.
Yeah.
Like the Mets' supposed number one starter is out for some period of time. And here we are.
We need Hello Darkness, my old friend, to start playing anytime Tyler McGill starts.
This is like...
Here we go again. He's like a bad penny.
This is the third year in a row that we have had the conversation where it's like the Mets have enough pitching depth where, you know, we shouldn't have to see Tyler McGill, and then Tyler McGill starts opening day. It's the third year in a row of this. Like,
it might be Luis Severino. You don't know.
It could be.
Luis Severino is at least one who might, like, if anyone is going to, if they're going to hit on anyone this year, it's him. I mean, I think, like, there's at least, if you squint, you could see the possibility, but that's it. That's one guy.
Yeah. So they currently have a rotation that is Jose Quintana, Luis Severino, Sean Manaea, and Adrian Hauser. Those are the four sure things in the rotation. And then the fifth slot now becomes a competition between the same guys it's been a competition between for the past 3 years. Tyler McGill, Joey Lucchese, and Jose Buto. David Peterson would have been a part of that conversation as well, but David Peterson is still injured, so it's not going to be David Peterson. But otherwise, it is the same mix of dudes. Tyler McGill supposedly has his new American Spork pitch that is sort of a discount Kodai Senga ghost fork. He was really good in September, and they were saying he was having good results with it and, you know, developing that pitch. And then he had his first spring training outing, in which the results were fine, don't get me wrong. And, you know, the first spring training outing rarely means anything. But he didn't really use the new pitch that everyone was talking about. So it's like, this is like the amazing thing. It's like, Tyler McGill, he's going to be good this time. We swear he's got a new special pitch. And then it just doesn't, like, he doesn't throw it. It's like, oh, okay. Bye.
Like, don't you want to see how it is in actual games now? Like, you developed it, now use it. But then
he has a new pitch, but she goes to another school.
You wouldn't know her. So we've got the same mix of dudes, and you know, but obviously
we have in the best shape of his life season, Joey Lucchese.
Yes, yes. He
lost 9 pounds.
Lucchese is exempt from all of our grumblings about all the Quad A starters. Yeah. Just assume that all of our pods from now on have a little asterisk, except Lucchese. He's fine. Yes.
He hired a nutritionist. He lost 9 pounds.
I think part of the reason I like him is because the Mets never saunter into spring like, everything's going to be fine. We have Lucchese as our number 6 starter. Like, they don't. And so because of that, because they don't set him up to be this other thing, that's why we like him.
That's true. Yeah, they don't set him up to fail like that.
He's eating grass-fed beef.
They don't set
beef.
Him up at all.
Oh, yeah, he's eating grass-fed beef.
Yeah, I loved his story.
Yeah.
Got like a meditation guy now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It was very Noah Syndergaard, the whole thing. Yeah. It was very Noah Syndergaard, like raw milk or whatever.
A different European extraction.
Yeah, it wasn't it like Italian personal chef or personal like trainer or something?
I do believe he was specifically Italian as the like guru type guy.
Well, of course, when your last name is Lucchese, I feel like you would seek out a fellow Italian, wouldn't you?
I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, we're rooting for you, Joey. You can do it.
Yeah, I think it's more than likely, actually, that so given the fact that David Stearns has said repeatedly that it's unlikely that the Mets will go harder after external options, despite the fact that Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are still available as we record this on February 26th. Those two guys remain unsigned.
I mean, they're going to have to sign 3+ starters next season anyway.
Right.
You're telling me that you wouldn't just take a couple years of these guys? It's not like they're going to be going for, you know, real money. I mean, I don't even understand what they're doing at this point.
I would say they would take a deep discount than you do go for them because, I mean, there was the rumor they're going after Juan Soto. So if you have to pay Juan Soto money and you have to pay Pete Alonso money, you don't want your money tied up in Blake Snell.
I suppose.
How much? I mean, I don't know. But they're also, I mean, the amount of payroll they're shedding this offseason is insane.
It is,
I mean,
really
they're dropping like $200 million or something. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, but maybe
it's not. It's up there.
It's large money. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know why they're sticking to this story unless they are under the impression that it's going to give them a leg up in negotiating, which seems okay. Like, go ahead, try. They probably have seen that one before, but okay.
Justin Verlander is hurt, by the way. I mention this for no particular reason. I certainly don't mention it because of a certain vesting option he has with the Mets for this year. So, again, that's like $40 million that you're not going to pay if he doesn't if that option doesn't vest. If he doesn't pitch enough innings because he's hurt yet again. So, I'm just saying. In addition to the payroll that they are already shedding, like it might be even more than they thought. And it's just it's bad for baseball that Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are still unsigned on February 26th. I mean, this is Scott Boras. They're both Scott Boras clients, and Scott Boras is very good at his job. We have said this over and over on this podcast, but occasionally he overplays his hand. And I think that this is an instance where he did. Cody Bellinger, also a Boras client, did finally sign like the other day with the Cubs for far less than he was projected to make. And he basically signed a glorified pillow deal. He has opt outs after the second year and the first year and the second year of a 3-year deal.
Which I think, I mean, because the thing is, if he stays healthy this year, he's going to be a gazillionaire in the offseason. So, you know, I feel like it's a good setup for him.
Yeah, probably. So circling back to the original point I was making with talking about Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, because the Mets seem not inclined to go after those guys for whatever reason, David Stearns hinted at that the long man in the bullpen is going to become like a more important role, which we've already talked about. Like that was already going to be the case because the Mets have built a rotation full of five and dive guys. So they're already going to need that. And now it's even more true because they don't have Kodai Senga anymore, who is probably going to be their biggest air quotes innings eater.
And they were also going to go on the same plan that they were last year with Senga anyway.
Yeah.
So they would always need a sixth man when they needed that extra day to give Senga the extra day of rest. So their rotation was always going to be in flux.
So it's likely that of those three guys, those are the three main guys in competition for that role. It's likely two of them will make the team. One of them as a member of the rotation and the other one is like a long man sort. But there are outside like sort of dark horse candidates that could potentially fill one of those roles. Sean Reed Foley is in camp, as is waiver pickup Max Kranick, who the Mets picked up from the Pirates. He made his spring training debut today. We're recording this on Monday night. He started earlier today. The game was not on TV or radio, so no one saw it, but he did start and he pitched well. And he talked about how he's a lifelong Mets fan and he's very happy to be playing for the Mets. So that endeared him to the fan base for sure.
aboard the Max Kranich
Yeah.
He's going to be an easy one to root for. Yeah. I like that kid.
Yeah. Going to make Max Kranich my dude randomly. And then he's just like not even going to make the team. And my dude's going to be over before the season even begins. Like John Curtis last year, basically. such a good track record I have. So yeah, this is not a good situation the Mets find themselves in. And I mean, even if Kodai Senga only misses a few weeks, a month, whatever, that is still, the Mets are on razor thin margins to begin with when it comes to their projected ability to compete this season. They are projected for, you know, in the low 80s win total, which in my mind is optimistic of the projection systems, but that's what the math says. And if you are a projected 82 win team, yes, the rest of the NL is hot garbage. I understand this. I have eyes. I can look around at roster resource too and see that the most other NL teams that would theoretically be competing for that third wild card slot, are their rotations are just as dire as the Mets rotation. It's not good if you look around the league, hot garbage all around, but you can ill afford to lose that win or two that it's going, that not even having Kodai Senga for a month is going to cost you, because then that could cost you that third wild card spot. Just that.
Yeah, when every win matters, we get like Tyler McGill getting blown up in April. That could really come back to haunt you in a tight wild card race.
Yep. It's not great.
Although honestly, this is also the kind of thing that leads you to not even be in the wild card race at all. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah,
is
yeah
that, like,
true too.
Is that it's, you know, a team can hold on until they lose their top pitcher, and the Mets have already lost their top pitcher. So, I don't know. It's hard. I feel like it's the projection systems, I feel like, probably are also acknowledging that 2022 exists, which I try not to because of my heart. But, you know, it does seem generous.
The, like, I don't know. It is, like, it's hard to look around at the league and see any team being able to absorb losing their top pitcher, you know, like that's just a huge blow, no matter who you are, even if you're the Dodgers or the Braves. But, you know, you're not replacing that production with Tyler McGill. You're replacing it with something better than that is the problem if you're another organization. And that's why it made no sense to not go after Blake Snell even before this injury, because in my mind, if you have like Blake Snell, for example, on your team and this happens, then you're not at the Tyler McGill level yet. You're at, you know, your five starters. Then you have five competent major league starters still.
But at the same time, all their moves in the offseason basically told us we're not going for it this year. So if they already basically told us that we're not going for it this year, why should they replace Kodai Senga? Because they're not planning on going for it.
I mean, I feel like there's a difference between not going for it and just tanking the season from day one. And even though, like, I should, you know, I should know by now that all teams are capable of just being garbage because it'll save them a dollar, I do sort of feel like I really thought they were entering this from like, well, we'll see. And I feel like but eventually you have to have pitchers. Like, you have to have pitchers, and they will need to have pitchers next year too. It seems difficult to imagine that they would be able to get two pitchers better than Blake Snell and also Blake Snell next year, like in one off season. So to me, I feel like get Blake Snell or whoever, like it could be Jordan Montgomery. This doesn't have to be, you know, a total rock star. It just has to be somebody who could throw a baseball, who's not Tyler McGill.
Are they
and they
hoping
just need to
Christian
sign him before David Peterson's healthy again?
Yeah,
that's just my fear.
Are they hoping Christian Scott pans out is the other thing,
or like one or two of Christian Scott, Mike Vassell, Dominic Hamill? I think they are hoping that, but they already said that they are not counting on that. They are not promoting them now. They already said that. So, like, okay, then, like, we're not seeking external help. We're not going to give our prospects a chance. So instead, we're going to, like, suck on purpose.
It feels very Brewers.
Yeah, well,
like, not that the Brewers are ones for sucking, but they're I feel like they're doing like smart long-term moves that involve like just throwing away a roster spot for no reason at all. And the New York Mets run by Stephen A. Cohen should not be doing that.
I mean, the Stearns was on the broadcast on Sunday, I guess it was. And they Gary sort of asked him about this. He said, like, basically you made, or not made, but like attempted to make one big splashy move this offseason, in the sense that you went hard after Yamamoto. And then once that didn't pan out, the rest of the moves that you made were sort of more, I forget how Gary phrased it, more elegantly than me, but like more like on the margins or small potatoes, whatever. Smaller to more intermediate moves. Can you basically explain that to the fan base who's not going to take that very well, more or less? And Stearns said, absolutely, I understand. We want to make the splashy moves too, as evidenced by the fact that we really wanted Yamamoto. And I think that everyone could see that we wanted him. But we only want to do the splashy moves for the right player at the right time. And we felt like Yamamoto was that player. And we didn't think other guys that were available were that player. And he was like, and I'm sure that that player will come up again, you know, soon enough. And I think that it was a very thinly veiled, like, Juan Soto reference.
Yeah. But you can't, like we've talked about, you can't count on these things a year in advance.
That's always been,
well,
my,
like, even if you
this.
Can, like, even if like we can see into the future and there's Juan Soto in a Mets jersey next year, they still need at least three pitchers.
Yeah. Right.
Like, well, unless they're planning on going after, like, Walker Buehler, Corbin Burns.
I mean, Walker Buehler's hurt again. They could get those two and still need one more. Like, it's, I feel like they're so.
That's when you get Tyler McGill.
That's what I feel like. They're so far off with the rotation. So, so, so far off that even making, like, an intermediary move now makes sense, because they are going to need so many moves between now and whenever.
Right. Like you have a crop of pitching prospects that's coming up that you're excited about. That's good. But like, you have to know that not all of those are going to hit. Like, maybe you get one or two, and that would be like a really good outcome. But
I mean,
you,
recently the Mets have gotten zero.
Zero. Right. I'm hoping for, you know, improvements in player development in this organization. And I think that we've already seen signs of that. So I'm hoping that, you know, they'll get some player development victories and one or two of these will pan out. But even still, like Maggie said, we don't just have one or two vacancies here that we're needing to fill. I don't understand. I never understood why, even as the calendar is almost turning to March, these two pitchers who, like, yeah, maybe they aren't the Verlander and Scherzer moves. They aren't big and splashy, but one of them is the reigning Cy Young Award winner. Like,
yeah,
they would be perfectly competent pitchers to add to this rotation, and we're not doing it because money. Which shouldn't be a problem for Steve Cohen. They want to get under the tax in 2025. That much is abundantly obvious to me. They can't do it this year. That's already too far gone. But every move that they've made has indicated to me that they want to get under the tax. The refusal to commit any money beyond this year, basically. All the guys have signed one-year deals, or like 1 year plus like options or like vesting things
again. But do they know that they do have to have a roster next year? They're gonna have to.
I hope they know that. I hope Juan Soto's on it. That's for dang sure. But yeah, they need some pitchers too.
Let's not forget about Pete.
Yeah.
Yes. Give me Pete and Juan Soto, and I will shut my mouth forever.
Me too.
Yeah.
Although
Yeah.
Steve Cohen did have very nice comments about Pete, so I am
Yes.
a little
Yes. I liked, I mean, I thought he said about as much as it was about as good as we could have hoped.
He gave the right answer. He basically said, you know,
He
I
did.
hope Pete Alonso
Correct.
has a great year and makes this as difficult as possible for us. And we want him back very badly, basically. And I was like, awesome. Good answer. Thank you,
Yes.
Steve.
I think he knows just what I think he even mentioned we know what Pete means to this fan base.
Yes.
Either him or Stern said that. So it's like, okay,
I think
no,
they
that
both
makes me
said
feel
it.
better, but I still will believe it when I see it.
Yeah, exactly. There are a few, you know, we covered the major storyline, which is not a good one, but there are a few positives from the first couple spring training games to cling to, desperately. One of them is that I watched with my own eyes Francisco Alvarez hit an opposite field home run on a pitch that was like up and away at his letters.
I'm like stupidly excited for Alvarez this
Oh
year.
man,
Yeah, it's like,
he could pop off.
oh, like what if he just becomes one of the best catchers in baseball? Wouldn't that be so cool?
with that power, oof.
Yeah, like he already made huge strides defensively last year to the point where he was one of the best framers in the league. So pair that with, you know, the offense that we know he's capable of and that he's shown flashes of. Oh boy. That would be really
Hello.
cool. Be really cool. And he's still so young.
Yeah, one.
And he did an interview
That's
in
what
the
blows my
same.
mind. It's just how young he is still.
Yep. And in the same game, he did an interview fully in English again. He's been doing all his
I
interviews in English,
know.
and they've been, and it's been awesome. And he's
He's
doing
worked
so
so
great.
hard on it.
Yeah. It's impressive.
He's just a
Yeah.
good dude and a
He
good
is.
guy to root for. Like, he's fun to watch. And yeah, man, he doesn't hit
Yeah.
cheapies.
I think like I wouldn't put it out of the question for you know, by the time the Mets like City Connects premiere in like late April, if the jersey is good, which we'll get to the jerseys later in the show, the jerseys overall. But if the City Connect design is good and Francisco Alvarez like tearing the cover off the ball in April, I'm just gonna like buy it an Alvarez City Connect.
He wears my lucky number 4, so I feel like eventually I have to get an Alvarez jersey or jersey because the jerseys are ugly. And also, I don't want to give Fanatics money.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Other good positives, like I mentioned, McGill, despite the absence of the new pitch in his debut, was pretty good. And Jose Budo was really solid in his debut as well. So like, you know, those guys who are now vying for that spot on the team, pitching well is a good thing. And then the standout pitching performer so far, though, has actually been Nate Lavender, who looks like an emerging bullpen candidate. He was throwing gas and looked really, really good in his first appearance. So, early candidate for Amazing Avenue King of Spring Training, which I'm sure I'll be writing the first entry of that pretty soon. So, yeah,
Like
there
I
are some
said, he
good
could be a
things.
nice calming presence on the mound.
Yes. Lavender is my favorite color, so
Can
I'm
we get
rooting for
like
him.
lavender colored jerseys and lavender? That would be cool.
I think the Met City Connect should be purple for the 7 train. It's not lavender purple. That's not the right shade of purple, but
No.
I will continue to stump for this.
I'm with you. No argument here.
We need more purple jerseys.
So the final Mets related thing I want to cover, which is not just a Mets related thing, but it touches on a theme that we talk about a lot on this show, which is like treat players like human beings, please. It's just this time it happens to involve a Met. Edwin Diaz made a post on his Instagram story recently that someone, it was in Spanish and someone translated it into English. And it basically said more or less, I'm not going to read the full quote, but it basically said more or less like criticizing is fine, it's part of the job. But it crosses the line once you bring someone's family into it, and it's not okay how my family's been treated. And that's messed up. He didn't give any specifics about like if there was an incident or repeated incidents or like what, or if it involved Mets fans or like what happened. But whatever it is, if you come for Edwin Diaz's family, like catch these hands. Like, no, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Like don't, it's, you shouldn't be directing vitriol at players to begin with. Like, I don't even like booing your own players. Like, I just think it's like tacky and like gross. But don't, like, going at their families, like, that's, that crosses the line from tacky to like evil.
Yeah, like this
unhinged.
They're private people. They're not out there, like, they're allowed to live their lives. Like, yeah, you can hate a player's performance, but you can't take it out on the player personally.
Yeah. No, you just, that's when you've lost the thread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I did see the rumor that it was because he said he wouldn't play in the next World Baseball Classic.
Oh my God. Of all the people to be mad at about the World Baseball Classic?
Yeah. Like, can you blame him?
Jesus Christ.
I don't know if that's true or not. I just heard that mentioned as a possibility. But, I mean, come on. You can't really blame the guy.
God, I hope that's not it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I hope it is it, because then it would be really stupid as opposed to whatever it is, which is probably less stupid and more hurtful.
Thank you. But again, his family has nothing to do with that.
I'm just imagining, like, in what world it would be, like, socially acceptable for you at your shitty desk job if you make, like, a bad presentation at work for some random to text your wife about it.
Or your one-year-old baby. Like,
oof. Like you suck, man. Like, after your PowerPoint that you gave at work.
Heckling you.
Like, yep. Like, sure, that's just, do.
That's literally what you're doing. It's dumb. Stop doing it. These people just need to get lives. Like, I beg of you to touch grass.
That's what it comes down to, is people need lives.
People need to touch grass. Touch grass. But speaking of players' families and treating players like human beings and, you know, trying to make a better world for players who don't have jobs that are normal. This is not baseball, but it touches all sports. A couple of former NHL wives launched a business to help athletes relocate after a trade, which is really, really cool and something that we wanted to shout on this show because we feel like it really fits with a lot of the things that we talk about really often on this show about treating players like human beings. You know, that the fact that this is something that just doesn't just affect them, it affects their entire family. And, you know, the women in their lives being very involved in their careers and things like that. So it's awesome. This is great.
We shouted out some of the Mets wives last year during the fire sale, specifically because of like how difficult and stressful that is. And the people who are most likely to be traded are also not the Max Scherzers who can afford to just throw money at the problem and just, like, you know, rent whatever apartment is listed for $10,000 a month. Like, it's so much harder that a business like this, I know it sounds ironically because it would be, so you're paying the money, but like, especially I think for the less wealthy successful athletes, it is going to actually be a big help because they won't be sort of just like desperately grasping for whatever they can get, which will certainly be expensive.
Yeah, exactly. The person who started it, her husband spent time with six different teams during his career and never played in one city for more than two seasons. So just imagine how difficult that is on a family, having to relocate every 2 years on average. It's basically like being a military wife, more or less, except
yeah.
So something like that. And you know, but the military wives have a lot more infrastructure to support them because the military puts these things in place as they should. So this is, you know, this is long overdue. This should be in place for other other jobs where you have to relocate a lot.
But as usual, in the interim, some women got it done because it was important.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's mostly because it usually falls on the women too. It's always the woman having to figure out the logistics because you got to be in California by tomorrow. And so you're up and leaving. And now the wife is at home with babies trying to figure out all the logistics that go into moving, which is a pain.
Call you when I know what your new address is.
Yeah. So it's a pain in the best of times, but when it's all of a sudden on short notice, now you got to figure out your whole new life with only like maybe a couple hours notice. It's a big deal. And yeah, they need a good support system for that.
Yeah.
Do just remember that all the players are humans.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other the biggest news in baseball this week, when it should be, you know, spring training getting underway and various storylines of this and that team and who's emerging and who's, you know, who's having a great spring. No. We're not talking about any of that. We're talking about how we can see the players' dicks through their pants.
Sometimes we see their testicles, Allison. Come on.
Yeah. So we just got to talk about the horrible uniforms.
Yeah. So my conspiracy theory is I think they made the pants on purpose so that they can fix them and then they don't have to do anything about the jerseys.
Which are bad too, by the way.
And a lot of people who are involved are saying that they're worse.
They are worse.
Yeah. The players have said so.
Yeah.
But then multiple players.
But they'll be much more expensive to completely replace, so instead they're making something super obvious that absolutely must be corrected for like FCC reasons. I that's my conspiracy theory.
But like, what are they gonna do when it rains?
Not replace the jerseys, Linda. They will not replace the jerseys when it rains is what they'll do.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for the first rainy spring training game.
It's gonna be wild.
Yeah. It's not good. Like it's, I don't want to be like talking about this when we could be talking about baseball. Like, and the players, like, I can't even imagine, like, that's not okay. Like, it's basically all these people that are posting these like really graphic photos of like people of men they don't know. And it's all on TV. Like,
This is not like a cartoon of like little heart pattern boxers. These are like, it works with the theme. They are human beings.
Yeah.
With their own bodies that ought to be respected. And it's kind of insane that they're going out there with see-through pants every day.
And I mean, Lord knows, if this were women's sports, and this level of like exposure in the uniform was happening, we would be freaking out on this podcast about it.
Yeah. We would have tried on the uniforms first. I'm just saying.
Yeah, true.
I do feel like this problem might have been caught earlier.
And like, jokes aside, there is precedent for this in women's sports. Like, there has been a movement among female soccer players to stop wearing white shorts because of period concerns. And the league has listened, and several teams have stopped wearing white shorts as part of their uniform because, you know, you can see
stuff.
And yet
the earth continues to turn.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no one's saying that the home uniform pants shouldn't be white. They just shouldn't be translucent.
Yeah, but the problem is that they're not white. The problem is that they're sheer.
Yeah.
There are white pants that aren't. They should have bought some of those.
They had them for many, many years. It's just when you go cheap, it's when the material becomes see-through.
Now we have a material problem, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do want to shout out Kate Feldman's article in CBS Sports about this, because she actually like did reporting and interviewed like fashion experts and materials experts and fabric experts about this. Instead of what many other baseball reporters did, which is stenography for the league, and just like the league is gaslighting the fans about it and basically saying, we don't know what you're talking about. The pants are the same as they've always been. And it's just so blatantly a lie that it's almost comic. It's the same thing that they did,
like,
with
no,
the baseball.
You really were seeing genitals for years. You just forgot about
You guys
them.
Have always been
just like
seeing,
you're forgetting about these right now.
You guys have always been seeing testicles. Don't you know? I think I would know. I've watched a lot of baseball.
We've always
games.
Been at war with East Asia.
There are no balls in Ba Sing Se.
Well, dear friend Meredith did offer to test old pants.
Yes.
So if anybody has old pants lying around, please send them to Meredith.
Folks may not be aware that in addition to Dr. Meredith Wills having a background in astrophysics, I was first introduced to her as a fiber artist. She is like a knitwear designer. And that's where I knew Meredith from before I knew she was a baseball physics genius. So really, it's like the league is just trying to drum up business for her. And I keep meaning to ask her if she has any other like secret talents so that we know what the next problem will be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, baseball just wants to keep her busy, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not like, baseball man friend.
It's almost like baseball has like designed these problems specifically for her to be the only one that can solve them.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But yeah, this is
this is also a new season of baseball. You're supposed to be getting excited. Like, and so instead of talking about like, you know, all these great players playing baseball, we're talking about pants. Like, stop embarrassing yourself, baseball, please. For 2 seconds, just be normal.
This is the same thing
and
they did with
the
baseballs.
Jerseys.
Yes, and
fix
the
jerseys.
You're at it.
This is
they
the same thing they did with the
brutal.
Baseballs, and they're gonna do the same thing again that they did with the baseballs, which is that they're gonna insist that they're the same as they always were. There isn't a problem, and then they're going to fix it and not tell anyone. They're just like suddenly the pants
gonna
are gonna be fine.
Inconsistently, they're not gonna fix them all at once. Some of them will be not fixed years later. And they'll be like, what are you talking about? It's the same thing. And we'll be looking at them next to each other. Visibly not the same thing.
But yeah, the pants are what's drawing the most attention. And that is probably the more critical problem to solve at this juncture immediately. But yeah, the jerseys are
legally
also
speaking,
really, really, really bad. Really bad. Like, they look like knockoffs that you get from websites that would break your computer. That would give your computer a virus.
Like, somebody was like, well, then don't buy anything from Fanatics. It's like, they have a monopoly now. Every sport is through Fanatics. So what am I supposed to do?
Buy it from a website that will break
your
computer.
Only hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally the black market. Buy it from a website that will install a virus onto your computer. That's
a good market. Buy it from Athlete Logos. We like him. He's good.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that like it is true that baseball in general and the Mets especially have like no shortage of awesome, I don't want to say off brand gear, but like brand adjacent, like all stuff that is like approved but different. And that's really nice. And I love having that there. And it does mean that like my wardrobe will survive this dark period. But also it would be nice to just have a jersey.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I also would like to point out that everyone losing their minds about like the low quality of the jerseys and also like the small lettering of them. Congratulations. Welcome to the world of women's
spacing?
Jerseys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Messy
like,
as shit. We got them.
We have been dealing with the tiny letters for a really long time. Welcome to the fold. That's the only option that has been available for women for a very long time. But
Here are two
I had in
different
mind.
size jerseys. One is twice as big as the other, and they have the same size letters, which is tiny.
What I had in mind when I wanted, you know, more equal options available was not making the other option worse. It was making the women's option better. But alas,
it's unfair that men and women have fewer. Yeah. So.
Well, and if it does get fixed, it's going to be because the man complained, not because of the women's jersey.
And they're still not going to fix the women's jersey.
Nope. Yeah, so and like everyone can look at the side by sides that people have already posted. Lots of people have posted them online. It's the difference is very, very obvious of how bad they are. And the worst part is that so obviously Fanatics deserves a bunch of the blame for this, but the worst part is that like part of the reason the letters are so small now is because they made them like move the MLB, the little MLB logo, it used to be higher up and now it's further down. So there's like less space for the letters to go in. The league made them do that. So the league also like actively made the jerseys worse.
Well, imagine being a rookie, you know, and then you finally get your call up, you get your first major league jersey and it looks like that.
It like, sucks.
You're going to have that framed in your house. Like, I'm sorry to all rookies this year.
Like, as a fan, I kind
and
of
take
expect
it from me. Take it from me, all the men out there buying jerseys in this new age. You're gonna want to wash that on Delicate inside out.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
Always.
Always. Yeah.
Just
like, you don't want that peeling.
Just saying.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, jerseys are bad. The league should fix it. But in the meantime, we will end the show.
Not everything
week.
Is bad.
Not everything is bad.
Just most things.
In the meantime, just most things. But like seriously, though. Other people have talked about this, specifically Michael Bauman, I think, made a tweet about this or even wrote an article about it. I can't remember. Michael Bauman of Fangraphs. But like this is part of a larger trend of everything just getting worse. Like it's just like late stage capitalism stuff. Like it's not just baseball.
That's literally
jerseys.
What it is.
It is exactly what it is.
They figured out that however much business they lose by making garbage is less than the amount that they save by making garbage. So that's what they do. And now we all get garbage forever because it is 1% more profitable.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they get richer while we get crap.
Yep. And like, as a fan, I sort of sadly expect to get crap and or like get screwed over by the inferior product when it comes to like apparel and stuff like that. But like the shocking thing about it is that the players wearing the jerseys on the field, like those are bad. Like the players getting screwed over is kind of a new level of this that I wasn't necessarily
like,
expecting.
This is your image you're projecting to the world. Like when everybody tunes in, this is what they're seeing. And you wonder why baseball's becoming this dog and pony show that'll never compete with the other major sports because they're an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
that pretty much sums it up.
This would never happen in the NFL. I mean, if it did, it would get fixed.
I mean, I would imagine though that if it's going to be successful in MLB, which I'm fairly sure it is, then yeah, it will. It will happen in NFL next. I mean, everything is just going to be everything. Everything.
Well, the
gets
NHL
worse.
Already signed a contract with Fanatics, so their jerseys are the next to go. So
great.
It's slowly
the best jerseys
happening.
In the world are the ones they're wearing. The best jerseys for the rest of our lives are the ones they're wearing right now.
And they still have the little Nike swoosh on them. The lie.
Yeah.
The lying swoosh.
Yeah.
The lie. The swoosh is a lie.
You lied to us, swoosh.
No. That was the real swoosh all along.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Anyway.
Yeah. but not everything is bad. We will each talk about something that made us happy this week, something that was good in our walk-off win segment. I want Maggie to go first because I know what hers is, and it's
yes,
it's very good, and it's something that's really a collective walk-off win for the show. So go ahead, Maggie.
You know, I had some other options this week, but I felt like we hadn't been petty in a little while, because we're good people and we're growing. But I wanted to be petty this week because my walk-off win, and I hate to say his name, and I'm sorry to bring this in. I know we like to have free of this person podcast, but Trevor Bauer can't play baseball anymore. He's real bad. They showed a picture or a video rather of him getting lit up by some Barstool dude, which, like, I guess I'm rooting for the Barstool dude all of a sudden, but that just goes to show you how bottom feeder we're talking right now. And I mean, and there's a couple things going on. One thing with this, I mean, in addition, it's just funny because he's really bad and he's very confused about being bad and he's very annoyed about it. You can really see he's annoyed. But the thing that makes me feel the best is I don't have confidence that teams will continue avoiding him because he's toxic, but I do think they'll avoid him if he's bad. So there we go.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good, and I hope he is feeling bad. And I think there's a really good chance that he is. And so that's my, like, once in a blue moon little petty walk-off win.
There were the thing that makes this video hilarious is that there are just, like, several layers of cringe to it. It's not just cringe in one way. It's cringe in so many ways. The first way, obviously, being that some random Barstool blogger is squaring up on Trevor Bauer's pitches. The second way that it's cringe is that all of the other Barstool chud, like, cheerleaders are, like, overreacting to him, like, hitting line drives in a bullpen simulated setting, and, like, freaking out about it. And then the third extra, there's multiple layers.
It's a very rich situation.
I thought three was going to be my last one, but there's actually four. The third layer of cringe is that when Bauer did strike him out, which happened at least once, I can't remember if it happened multiple times in the video, but Bauer did strike him out once, and he did that stupid sword thing that he does. He did it against a random guy. He's, like, stunting on him when he struck him out. And I'm like, bro, like, he shouldn't have even been fouling off your shit if you're still a major
It's
leader.
Really funny.
It was so cringe.
It's so pathetic.
It was so cringe. And then the final layer of cringe is that Trevor Bauer, like, allowed this to be posted on the internet because I guess
he's
going to help him get a job.
Like, look, I still have an arm.
Huh. Look at me. I'm touching 95 in a garage.
But he wasn't even touching. He was consistently, like, at 81.
Yeah, like, no.
He
dude
wasn't
is
really
cooked.
Throwing that hard either.
Capital C cooked, and it's great.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He just did it for the attention. Because I guess in his book, any attention is good, whether it's good or bad.
I should note, because we're being petty, which is fine and good. If there's anybody to be petty against, it's him. But in the interest of being fair and balanced, TM, this Barstool guy did play Division III baseball, like, a decade ago.
So, like, could he be, though?
He used to be okay at baseball, but here's the thing, is that, like, if any actual professional, like, good professional baseball player, like, pitcher, pitched against this guy, he would not be making contact, let alone getting base hits. He would be, like,
that's like when Jacob
DeGrom
pitched against the Palm Beach Cardinals. Like, he trashed those poor kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
and
that's
those are professional, technically professionals.
If you're trying to get a job in Major League Baseball, that's what it should look like. You should be pantsing these dudes. But instead, he's like, he struck him out once, and otherwise he made a bunch of contact and he did the sword thing. It's so funny.
So
he also had that big, that grunting thing that, it's some pictures of it, but I was just like, it in this context, it really, it doesn't read the same. It reads more like, oh, that was a hard one for you.
Okay. Yeah, like, you're really struggling out there, buddy, aren't you?
Yeah, when you hit the showers early there.
You're driving the struggle bus today.
Take it easy.
Oh, good.
Find yourself.
Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win was, it was I'm a good girlfriend, and I bought my boyfriend tickets to see Lord of the Rings in concert in Radio City.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous.
And it was Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers.
The best one. It is the best of the three.
So it was very cool because you are getting a full orchestral concert while also you're seeing a movie. So, and I'm sure that's incredibly hard for the performers because you have to make sure you're all in sync with the movie because you're playing the entire soundtrack.
And I did Rocky Horror Floor Show in college every all 4 years. And let me tell you, it's hard to stay in sync.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Just watching these people. And I'm sure like the conductor probably is the one that's got to control all that. So also good for him because he's the one probably cueing everybody. So, I mean, I've seen Lord of the Rings. It was like, it's fine. It's a movie, but, you know, but seeing this experience it, and also, you know, you had everybody like applauding when like Gimli and Legolas came on. I applauded Legolas. I will. and Aragorn, there's other, you know, parts of the movie that, you know, people always applauded. But, you know, just seeing it on a huge screen at Radio City with a full, and the soloist knew all eyes were going to be on her because she had this long gold gown on that sparkled. Oh, but she was incredible. So just the whole experience of it, too, because the whole crowd was just so into it. And at one point there was a violin solo. Oh, I did stop watching the movie so I could watch her perform. And she, again, she was incredible. So you don't realize just how much music goes into making one movie and just all the different instruments that go into making one movie. Like they had a harp, they had, you know, they had a choir, they had all the different wind instruments, all the different string instruments, the cellos, the violins, the clarinets, the drums, and pretty much any instrument you can think of they had. And then so it also kind of made me sad because you were seeing this grand epic adventure that Peter Jackson created, and now we just get like CGI crap, which again is what we're saying. It's just the worsening of everything.
In crappening of everything.
It is.
Independent of Linda's extremely excellent walk-off win. I did recently rewatch all three of those movies, and my main takeaway was, and I'm just gonna like be my dad for a second. Remember when they used to make movies?
Yes, that's what this felt like.
You can see everything. Yeah. I mean, you saw Two Towers. Half of that takes place
at night,
in the middle of the night.
Yep.
And you can see everything.
Well,
like,
I forget
every
what
single
the,
thing.
I forget what the quote is. I think it might be Peter Jackson when they asked him, where's the light coming from? It's at night. And he goes, the same place the music's coming from. Like, it doesn't need to be realistic. You just need to make a movie. And you need to be able to see the movie.
And you can hear every line. Ah, yep. I mean, really, no, they just used to put together films with thought and care.
Well, they are going to show Return of the King. We don't know when yet. But they did say coming soon. So I'm assuming we missed the first one. What is that? Fellowship of the Ring. I was not on top of that, so I failed at my duties there. But I did, because they only do it for 1 week. So we were kind of pressed for time of, like, what show we could even see. So So now we saw two towers. So now I have to keep an eye out for when returning, because I think they do it around the world. So I think they do Europe first and then they come here to do it. So hopefully next year we'll see Return of the King, because he was in his element. He was so happy. I knew he would be thrilled. I knew he would love it. And yeah, just like I said, it was just a fun experience overall. But the one thing was they performed the credits too. So a lot of people were getting up and leaving during the credits. I'm like, but they're still performing. They deserve to get their bows and their.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I get sometimes you just want to head home after the movie, but you're not seeing a
Yeah.
movie. You are seeing a performance.
You're seeing, yeah, that's why you're there, is for the performance. So that was the one thing I didn't really like, but it's a long movie and there was an intermission. It was already 11:30 at that point. We needed to get a train home. But no.
You'd think that the post-credit scene in all the Marvel movies will have conditioned people to stay till the end.
Right? But yeah, so that was the only thing. I was like, come on, they deserve their applause. Like that, they performed almost nonstop for 3 hours. Yeah, there was an intermission, but
That's
no,
incredible.
but it was incredible. So next year, my Olga Flynn will be Return of the King.
Yeah. I went to a very similar performance. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra did the Harry Potter films.
Yes, one of my friends saw it when they did the Harry Potter.
And yeah, and I went to one. Did I go to more than one? I went to at least one of them. And it was freaking awesome. I had so much fun. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, that's probably a good one.
Yeah,
Because
like
the music in that is all good.
music in Harry Potter is incredible. Lord of the Rings, incredible. They also do it for like Star Wars, which has, legendary music. Yeah, these franchise films with the epic music, that really good to go to one of these. If you haven't been to a performance like that for like your favorite film franchise, it's worth it. It's worth it.
It
It's
is.
so good.
I mean, it
Yeah.
wasn't even my favorite, and it was even worth it to go.
Yeah.
Oh,
It's so fun. So my walk-off win for this week is that over the weekend, Michael and I went on a nice long hike with our two friends. And then we went to a brewery afterwards. And it was just a lovely day. Like, I don't really have much more to say than that. It was just really nice. We took Blue with us. She had a great time.
no.
The staff at the brewery gave her a giant cookie at the brewery, and she was really happy. And
Because she's perfect.
yeah, because
Yes.
she deserves a cookie.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. And yeah, it was just a it was a really nice day. I hadn't been on like a good hike in a while. Not since I think we hadn't been on like a good hike since last summer when we went to San Diego and we hiked in Torrey Pines. I'm also like, obviously my knee is still recovering, so like long hikes aren't in the cards often for me these days. But this one was a relatively like low to moderate effort hike, which was perfect, through the woods. And it was just like, it's cliche, but being out in nature is healing. It's nice. It was nice. And the weather didn't end up being quite as cold as we thought. We thought it was going to be chilly, but it was nice. It was like crisp, and it was like in the 50s, or like in the high 40s, low 50s. It was like perfect. With a sweatshirt and a fleece, it was nice. So yeah,
Good hiking
that's
temps.
yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really nice hike. So that does it for the show this week. You can go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can support our work by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can get in touch with this show by email, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media. We are at A Pod of Their Own on all of the things. You can follow each of us on social media. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cervich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home and Applesauce in your favorite app of choice, and you should be able to find us right there. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. We should be resuming weekly recordings shortly. Now that we're in spring training, we'll be up and running every week again in your feed soon. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there's no crying in podcasts.